Okay, we all know what that means. It's time to drive to work. Okay, so today's topic comes from my blog. Somebody wanted me to talk about cameo mechanics. So I guess I should start by explaining what are cameo mechanics. So cameo mechanics are when we take an old mechanic, an existing mechanic, and we put it in the set in a very small dosage, usually on one card, maybe two, three cards at the most. The idea is it's just showing up in a little tiny bit, but we're referencing actual mechanic and using the name. So I'm going to talk about how we started doing that, why we started doing that, and what rules we have for our cameo mechanics. But first, because I love talking Magic history, let's start by going through the history to get to where we got to cameo mechanics. Okay, so in the beginning, we go all the way back to early days of Magic. So Richard makes Alpha back in 1993. So I show up full-time in 95. And at that point, the rules at the time were, you know what? We got lots of mechanics. Magic has lots of design space. We don't need to reuse things. So when we would make a mechanic, one of two things would happen. Either it would become evergreen, and then any set could use it, or it would be like, okay, we've done that. Put it in the pile. Let's do new things. And there's a bunch of mechanics like Cume of Upkeep and Rampage. There's a bunch of mechanics that showed up in early sets, and then we try to put them in other sets. And I think we quickly realized that the bar for evergreen is a pretty high bar. That you have to be pretty elegant and clean, and there has to be a lot of usage for you to get to evergreen. So the idea of this sort of, like, I think what we realized was we can't just keep throwing things on the evergreen pile. And that things like Rampage and like Tune of Upkeep that were, for a blink, evergreen, it didn't make sense for them to be evergreen. It just didn't make sense. So we then said, okay, we're going to be much more cautious about what becomes evergreen. And then it's not that we didn't ever change evergreen mechanics. You know, we introduced Fear, and Fear became Intimidate, which later became Menace. Like, we would change things. Things would go in and out. Like, we would experiment with things in evergreen. But we were pretty careful, like, if we put this into evergreen status, it's something that really means something. And then we get to Onslaught, and I've talked a lot about Onslaught in some recent podcasts. I'm not going to go into great detail. The key element here was Bill had asked me to do some work on the set. I wanted to add cycling, and at the time it was a big deal because we didn't bring mechanics back. And eventually we decided to bring them back. We brought cycling back, and then I think that kind of broke the wall of, okay, mechanics can come back. We have good mechanics. There's no reason not to bring mechanics back. But the idea was when we bring mechanics back, we're going to bring the mechanics back and it's going to be an important part of the set. You know, every set has mechanics, and they can be new. They can be repeat mechanics. But, you know, if we're going to – so the idea – the next sort of stage was, okay, we can reuse mechanics, but if we do that – we really want to bring them back in a substantial way. Hey, that's one of the mechanics of the set. It's not evergreen, so if you're not evergreen, you're one of the mechanics of the set. Then we got to Time Spiral Block. So Time Spiral Block, the original idea behind it was it had a time theme. We introduced Suspend and Split Second, and Flash got introduced. And the idea was we were messing around with time, and I was really... this was early in my reign as head designer. I was a big believer that blocks had to have very concrete plans. I wanted to do more, like the sets needed to stand apart from each other. So we were doing time, so I was really enamored by the idea of what if we past, present, and future, and the present ended up being alternate reality present, since present didn't mean much in a vacuum. And so the first set was very much about nostalgia, about the past. So we just brought back a lot of mechanics, way more than we ever had before. Like, normally, when early Magic would have two named mechanics, and eventually got to the point where we did, you know, two to four. And I don't know exactly what Time Spiral has in it. Time Spiral has, we brought 8 mechanics, 10 mechanics. We brought back a bunch of mechanics. And really, with, like, us going, oh, it's nostalgia, let's have fun. And we really sort of, Time Spiral Block was us being very, what I call, indulgent. Like, oh, you know, and we made a lot of cards that were super fun, and if you're really enfranchised, were great. And in future sight, like the problem sort of exacerbated. And on the last, at future sight, I was really trying to play around with the potential of magic. What could the future of magic be? And one of the things we did is we did a thing called mix and match. So mix and match said, what are two cool mechanics in magic's history that have never together, that have never been together? But real quickly, because it's my podcast, I can tell these stories. Mix and match, where mix and match came from is, there used to be a thing called the Magic Invitational, which was like kind of the all-star game for magic. I would run it, and one of the things that was unique about the Magic Invitational is I got to make formats. So one of the formats I made was called Duplicate Seal, where all players played with the same sealed pool. Everybody got the exact same sealed pool. And originally I just used normal cards, but as I did Duplicate Seal every Magic Invitational. And I started wanting to be a little more creative. So I went to, I think it was Bill Rhodes, might have been Joel Mick at the time, and said, hey, can I make new cards to put, you know, can I make, if anyone's ever played in the unknown event at a MagicCon, this is where this idea came from. I did it for the first time in the Magic Invitational. And we had the ability to make stickers, you know, I'm like, you know, could I make cards? So Bill said to me, he goes, yes, but with one caveat. And his one caveat is, don't make cards we could just make in a normal set. Like, don't waste design space, essentially. So one of the things that I leaned into, part of it was I did some things, you know, that I didn't think we were doing. But one of the big things I did was I made use of, because we didn't bring back mechanics, or if we did bring back mechanics, we brought them back, like, one at a time. I said, oh, what if I brought back two mechanics on the same card? You know, because we, at the time, in the early days of the Invitational, maybe we'd bring back mechanics, but we wouldn't bring multiple mechanics. Now we'll bring back multiple mechanics. So the idea of having two existing mechanics on the same card that aren't evergreen, like, that wasn't something that was easily we were going to replicate. And I thought that was pretty cool. So I made a lot of mix and match cards for the Invitational. So when we were making Future Sight, and I was looking for, like, cool, wacky future things, I was trying to be very extrapolative, meaning I was trying to make designs that came out of things we had done. And so one of the ideas that came to me is, oh, maybe this is an awesome place for mix and match. I thought mix and match were super fun. So Z Moshowitz was an intern at the time, a pro player in the Hall of Fame. And I said to Z, here's what I want you to do. Go take every mechanic, and I want to find the mechanics that work well together. And so he took all the mechanics, he made a chart, and basically he gave them a grading from 1 to 5. Five meant amazing combos. This is the synergy is amazing. And one meant nombo, doesn't work. These things don't even work together. And he made me a list of all the 5s, the 4s, the 3s, the 2s, and the 1s. And then we ended up putting all the 5s, I think all the 4s, and some of the 3s, I believe. But anyway, we did a bunch of mix and match. We for sure did all the 5s. I'm not 100% we did all the 4s. But anyway, he came up with a list. We made the list. We put them in. So there were a lot of one-of mechanics there. And then we were also doing future shifted cards. So we took mechanics that we just tweaked. And so some of them mechanics, either some like poison we brought back, people didn't think we'd bring it back. Some were like we did Grave Storm, which was like a tweak on a storm. So we did a lot. Anyway, so the stat I use is if you counted up the number of mechanics that existed in Magic, named mechanics, before Future Sight, and then you counted the number of named mechanics in Future Sight, they were almost the same number. I think the existing number I think Future Sight was like 3 or 4 short of that number. But anyway, there was a huge number of things. So we did a lot. We brought back a lot of it. Time Spiral did some. Plane Shift did some. Plane of Chaos did some. But Future Sight went overboard. And one of the big takeaways that we got from Time Spiral block is, and I've touched with this, one of the stats we check, we look at how well things sell. We also look at how many people are playing with sanctioned events, like how many people are playing with it. So before Time Spiral, the health of the sales and the number of games being played in sanctioned play tended to trend together. Oh, a lot of people are playing this set, it sells well. Time Spiral, for the first time, it was tracking well in play, but it wasn't tracking well in sales. And that was the discovery of what we call the invisibles, which is there are a lot of players that we don't see. There's enfranchised players that play in sanctioned play or play in digital play that we have access to that we can see, but there's a much, much larger group of players that aren't. And the big lesson of Time Spiral Block was this idea of vocabulary comes at a cost. That for an enfranchised player, say, hey, I'm bringing back a mechanic you love, there's very little cost there. They already know the information. In some ways, for the enfranchised player, when we put the keyword on it, it makes it easier to understand. Because you go, I've learned what that keyword means. As soon as I see the keyword, I don't have to read the card. You know, because the keyword is shorthand. But for a new player, and this is the problem we found with Time Spiral and the whole block, is let's say I'm a new player. Well, normally Magic has 2 to 4 new mechanics. I mean, nowadays we might have a little more than that. But, you know, there's some number of new mechanics. But, like, I believe if you were a new player playing Time Spiral, there were, like, 10 new mechanics. And if you were playing Future Sight, there was 40 new mechanics. I mean, and that's one of the things that really hit home is this idea that, okay, vocabulary means something. There's a cost of vocabulary that, yes, it is nice for enfranchised players to have the vocabulary because they're already using it. It really is a barrier for new players, and that we needed to be careful with that. Now, the following year was Lorwyn Block. And in Lorwyn Block, in Morningtide, this was all on my shoulders. In Lorwyn, we cared about different species, goblin, elf, merfolk. Then in Morningtide, I made us care about classes, warrior, wizard. And so the idea was, I'm like, oh, well, creatures have, a lot of creatures have multiple creature types, so we could... we could care about this one here and that one there and it'd have all this depth. But it ended up making this really complex network that was very hard for people to track, which led to Matt Place and I creating what we called New World Order. Did a whole podcast on New World Order. Really the idea is, look, for new players and make barrier of entry easier, we really have to pull back how complex common is. And it really made us, so New World Order was important for us. We said, look, common has to be as easy as we can make it. Uncommon, we should be careful, can be more complex than common. And rare and mythic rare, look, the average new player does not get a lot of exposure to rare and mythic rares. There's one in each pack versus, at the time, 10 commons and 3 uncommons and a land. So the idea was that mostly their experience opening a pack is common. That's what New World Order is built on. And we had a look at uncommon. It made us relook at how all the rarities worked, what complexity was. And a lot of New World Order is, look, there's a complexity that comes. And in New World Order, I should say, wasn't just a matter of the creature types in Lorwyn. It also took into account all the stuff we learned from Time Spiral. The net answer was, Magic is a complex game. And that's okay, this is something people enjoy about it, but we have to be careful. And we want to make sure that the entry-level experience is not so, we don't want to make a barrier. Time Spiral was just less experienced players were just bouncing off Time Spiral Block. And some of them were bouncing off Lorwyn Block. And so we're like, oh, okay. So we said, we made a conscious effort, and we said, you know what? We're going to be much more careful about what we do. Now, roughly around that time, not exactly sure, we did start picking up the concept of what we call deciduous. And what deciduous meant is, look, evergreen meant, okay, we can have this mechanic almost every set. Evergreen means like most sets. Maybe every once in a blue moon for a specific reason, something's not there. But barring a rare exception, evergreen mechanics are there all the time. That's kind of the nature of evergreen, that it's always around, it's evergreen. But I realized that there were some things that were cool, that made sense, and the one that comes to mind, and I'm not sure necessarily this was the one that cemented it, but it's the one that was very loud in my mind, was in Ravnica Block, original Ravnica Block, which is right before Time Trial Block, so all this discovery is happening around the same time. I introduced hybrid mana. I made hybrid mana. And I realized, like, we brought hybrid mana back in Shadowmoor, which was after Lorwyn. But after we brought it back, so one of the things you tend to do early with new things is you lean into them for splash, right? It's like, oh, look at this cool new thing. So in Ravnica Block, I think we had a vertical cycle of each of the Hypermana, and relative to the guild that it was in. So there were 12 in Ravnica, and there were 9 and 9 in the other two sets. Each, if the guild showed up, you got a vertical cycle. Vertical cycle meant a common, uncommon, and a rare. Sometimes a mythic rare, but it means one in each rarity, usually. And then in Shadowmoor, we did the thing where half the set was hybrid. Probably should have been less than half. But anyway, about half the set was hybrid. And so the idea was, that was also using it in a very splashy way, that, ooh, we could craft a whole environment out of it. Like, in Shadowmoor, you could draft monocolor. That's not something you can easily draft. I mean, in fact, Shadowmoor is, like, if you want to draft monocolor, you 100% could, every time. There's not a lot of formats. That's always true. It was true in Shadowmoor. But after Shadowmoor, what I realized was that hybrid was this neat tool. It wasn't something that was evergreen in the sense that we needed to put it in every set. Every set didn't need it. But I didn't want to say, well, you can only use hybrid mana when it's a major factor. Like, it was clear that hybrid mana had this functionality, like, we should use it where we needed to use it. So there's another interesting story here. So Ice Age introduced what we call cantrips. So cantrips, as introduced in Ice Age, the card will let you draw a card at the beginning of the next turn, basically. We've quickly figured out that just drawing the card right away was fine. The reason the Ice Age people didn't do that was there was a card, Urza's Bauble, I think, where you got to play it right away, and it thinned out your deck if that you drew the card right away. And so that one card wanted to be delayed, so they made all of them delayed. But we later realized that cantrips were very effective. Mostly what a cantrip means is, it means draw a card. So if we say I spell the cantrip, it does whatever it does, and it draws a card. And the idea that you replace the card you play is very interesting. Generally, it costs about 2 mana to replace the card. So if you want to cantrip something, if you take the normal cost and add 2 generic mana, roughly is that. I mean, there's reasons it can be less, but roughly it's about 2 generic mana. Anyway, so when we first came up with cantrips, Bill's take on them was, oh, this is a special thing. We shouldn't do them all the time. And so I remember in Urza's Saga Black, for example, he said, no, we're going to hold it back so we can bring it back to be exciting. And so I came up with the free mechanic because we couldn't do cantrips. So the free mechanic is a mechanic where you get to untap lands equal to the number, it tells you how many lands you get to untap, which is equal to the mana value of the card. That got broken. It essentially was totally uncapped. Anyway, and then it eventually came to the conclusion that cantrips were a tool. We should just use cantrips where we want to use cantrips. Cantrips aren't better if we save them up for one set. Cantrips are better if we use them where we need to. It's a costing mechanism, much like hybrid is a costing mechanism. And so what we started realizing is we had this class of things we called deciduous. And what deciduous meant is, look, every Magic session should have access to these things, but they're not evergreen in the sense that we don't think every set needs to have them. And the rough idea of deciduousness in general is, or at the time, was, look, we're not going to do all the deciduous things at once. The idea is not that it's evergreen and every decision again, but it's like, oh, I can pick and choose from the deciduous if it makes sense. And there wasn't a limit on deciduousness, but the general idea was, look, we got to be conscious of how many words we're introducing. When you use any vocabulary word that the beginning player doesn't know, that's the vocabulary word. You have to be conscious of that. Okay, the next big evolution of our story is the commander mechanic. So the real quick history of this is there was a group of players, I believe in Alaska, that made a variant, which they called Elder Dragon Highlander, which is what they called it, EDH. And Sheldon Mennery was stationed, he was in the military, he was stationed in Alaska, and he met these players. He started playing Magic with them. They introduced him to this format. He really liked the format. He made a few changes to it, but he enjoyed the format. So when he would come to the Pro Tour to judge, he was a head judge. He judged. Sometimes he was a head judge. When he came to the Pro Tour, he introduced this format to the judges. And for a while, after the Pro Tour was over, this is the format the judges would play. And little by little, it caught on. Some of the pros would see it and played it, and like it just slowly built momentum. And eventually, so we used to do a product every year. We called it sort of the experimental product, where we just do something different. Sometimes it'd be an onset, it could be plane shift, or conspiracy, I mean, the different things. And the idea was that we just tried different things. And so this format had picked up a little bit of speed. And so I said, you know what, let's make some commander decks. So we made 5 commander decks. And they went over like gangbusters. And I think it was a combination of, there's someone just inherently, it's a fun format. And Wizards started actually promoting the format. We called it Commander. And, you know, we had such success that first year. We put out a product the next year. And then after that, the next year was a rush thing because of our timetable, the way we work years ahead. So we did something quickly. But 2 years later, we made more decks. And from that year forward, every year we've made commander decks. Then we started making commander decks per product. And we started making a lot more commander decks. But it became a really big means by which to promote a more casual side of Magic. But one of the things that happened in commander decks is Commander is a format that has access to most the cards in Magic. There's some banned cards, but most of the cards in Magic. And so the nature of Commander was, hey, there's just a lot of the vocabulary of Commander was just higher. That if you're going to play Commander, you're playing, you know, many years. You know, now it's 30 plus at the time of the story, you know, 20 plus. But you're playing a lot of different mechanics. And so when they were making the commander decks, originally I think their earliest commander decks, I think, trying to remember, I did not build a lot of commander decks, so I think early on they just used Evergreen, and then I think they used Evergreen Deciduous, and then I thought they like, okay, we do Evergreen Deciduous and we can introduce one or two new mechanics. And then eventually they said, you know what, it's just fun if we have a cool mechanic. It's okay, we can have one-ons. You know, like, I want to make this cool card, and this cool card is referencing this thing. No, I guess I should point out. We had a rule at the time that said, let's say, you know, we'll make a Magic set, and we'll name something. Landfall is a good example. Landfall is when, you know, landfall is a it's a ability word that says when you play a land, something happens. It's not a keyword. It's an ability word. It's an italic, meaning the card works without the ability word. So if we would make a card with landfall, not in a set about landfall, it's just one card, what we tend to do was just write it out and not label it. And we would get some feedback from the more franchise players, like, that's just landfall. Why don't you call it landfall? And likewise, there was a period of time when we had cycling, and then we, I think Brian Tinsman made a variant of it in the set. And the idea was you could discard your card to go get a basic land. And I remember saying to him, well, this is just cycling, except instead of drawing a random card, you're getting a basic land. What if we just call it land cycling or basic land cycling, you know? And so we ended up, rather than give it a new name, we tied it into cycling because one of my big beliefs is, hey, if things work the same, let's use similar vocabulary, then people aren't learning whole new vocabulary for the same thing. Have you ever heard me gripe about how I think scry and surveil should not be two different words? Basically the same concept. But anyway, so at the time, in the main set, if we were making a mechanic that we had named in the past, but that wasn't a key thing to the set, we wouldn't name it in the main set. So if we made one landfall card, we wouldn't label it landfall. So early commander decks, I think, took the same strategy. And then at some point, someone said, why can't we just call it landfall? You know, like, the audience for this is not beginning players. The audience for this isn't franchise players that play a format where they're playing lots and lots of stuff. Like, why are we, they'll just, you know, the audience of this product will like it more if we just use the name. And so they went and got permission, and they just started using the name. And then, as is the case in Magic design, things snowballed. Like, once you could do it once, you could do it twice. And then eventually it just became, hey, the thing we do in Commander. That if we want to, you know, use a mechanic and use it once, great. That's fun. You know, and that there's a lot of mechanics out there that are hard for us to bring back because there's not a lot of design space left in them. But there might be space for one card. Why can't Commander make that card? So they did. So Commander followed this pattern of just, so Commander really introduced the concept of cameos. Hey, we're going to bring old mechanics back. We're going to do them as one-ofs. We're not going to, like, it's not necessarily a main theme of what we're doing. It's not necessarily a main theme of the deck. It's just one or, you know, a few cards being brought back. And so we did that for a while, and it was very popular. People liked that. So, and I did not do my research to remember what set in what core set, not core set, what premier set was the first set to have a cameo in it. But I know at one point we were working on something, and there was a card. It was either a rare or mythic rare. And the idea is, look, this card just does this thing. It just does this mechanic. And we could spell it out, but you know what? I think it was a mythic rare. It's a mythic rare. Beginners are not most likely not going to see this. It shows up so infrequently. And for the franchise players, it would be so much easier if we just say what it is. And so we said, oh, okay. It's a mythic rare. It's aimed at a different player. That makes sense. And this is the case in Magic Design. Once you do something once, you start getting the ball rolling. And so again, I mean, next time it was a rare or something, you know. And so the idea was, look, some of the what we aim at is aimed. We have to think about beginning players. It's important. There's a lot of players, and not even right. If you're saying beginner, there's a lot of players that are less advanced players. Some of them might have been playing for 10 years. So when I say a beginning player, that implies that they just started playing. What I really mean is a less enfranchised. There's a lot of players that play very casually that. Look, there's a lot of rules they don't know, and there's a lot of things that, you know, and vocabulary is very meaningful to that group of players. But, look, there's also a lot of players, much like, you know, some of the Commander players, who, like, really do enjoy, that it's fun to, like, bring back and do one-offs, and, you know, like sometimes we make a cool card and, like, I don't know if we're bringing this mechanic in a big way, maybe there's not enough design for it, but, man, there's just one design that's really awesome, it's super flavorful. And, like, why? It'd be really cool if we did that. And I think what we realized is Commander had really sort of educated us that, like, there was what RD calls the rule of cool, right? Sometimes you do something, and, like, look, there's a lot of equity in something just being cool, and that you want to be careful that you don't let your rules kind of lock out you being able to do cool things. And so what we said is, okay, let's walk through why we've been so careful about bringing back one of. And a lot of what we said was, look, a lot of it is about just the barrier to entry and the vocabulary issue of just overwhelming people. We don't want a time spiral again. And no, by the way, Modern Horizons was just us saying, hey, there's an audience for this kind of thing, and we should be able to make products for them. It's not premier sets, and that's why we made Modern Horizons. There's an audience for more advanced, so there's lots of different mechanics going on. Also, by the way, I think the success of Modern Horizons, because Modern Horizons also did a lot of cameos. I guess probably I should have brought Modern Horizons up before I get to this part. But Modern Horizons also did a lot of cameos. It was really fun. And so I think we said, okay, we understand the reason we want to be careful with vocabulary is there's a level of player that's going to get overwhelmed, but there's also players, there's some franchise players that really do enjoy the vocabulary, that it would be very fun for them to see this mechanic come back on one card in a cool way. So what we said is, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to sort of draw a line. And the line we drew is we said, okay, commons and uncommons are much more about limited play and about exposure. That if I'm opening a booster pack, that's the vast majority of what I see is the commons and uncommons. Okay, we're going to hold the line at commons and uncommons. We're going to say, look, the mechanics that are going to show up in commons and uncommons are evergreen mechanics, a small number of deciduous mechanics we think are simple enough, and the mechanics of the set mechanics. And even then, there are some set mechanics that we don't put a common. There are even some set mechanics we don't put a common or uncommon. But the idea is that we're limiting how many mechanic names, vocabulary shows up at the lower rarities, at what is the major exposure to the pack. But at rare, at mythic rare, which is more designed for constructed, which is more designed for the enfranchised player, let's do what the enfranchised player wants. And so we said, okay, we're going to do cameos. And like I said, as always is the case, let us do it once. It will definitely snowball. And so we're definitely doing more cameos than we used to. We are being very careful where we do cameos. Oh, and another big thing about cameos is there's a big difference between this is not a hard concept to understand. It is just something we don't normally do and haven't done in a while. And this is a complicated mechanic. We are careful when we cameo. Mutate is not a great cameo mechanic. It is complicated and hard to understand. Now, maybe we cameo in a Modern Horizons like set for advanced players, but the other thing we said about cameo mechanics is we want to make sure that we're doing something that you can read the card and understand the card. There's some mechanics that are complex enough, you really need enough of them in the set to sort of, like, it's worth the energy of learning what's going on. On one rare, one mythic rare, that is, so cameo means we can bring things back. We want to be careful what we bring back, how we bring it back. And we tend to restrict it to rares and mythic rares. Like I said, the fuzzy area is we have some number of things in the deciduous category. Some of that deciduous stuff, like Landfall, like Kicker. There's some things that we do believe is organic enough and simple enough into the game that we do want access to it. And that stuff can occasionally show up, usually it's uncommon. So that is the general, that is in one drive's worth of a podcast, the cameo mechanics. There's a lot of evolution over time. That's why I thought this was interesting, a little history of, it took a lot of changes. But anyway, that is where we are now. We can bring back mechanics. We can bring back names. There are restrictions of when and where and how, but it is something that is on the table and that actually we're doing quite a bit these days. So anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed my talk about cameo mechanics, but I'm now at work. So we all know what that means. It means it's the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. I'll see you all next time. Bye-bye.